Okay, we're on.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for coming back for Cook the Rav and the Rebbe, number 21. So last week we saw the Rav Cook on the Haggadah. We saw some themes about Yetzias Mitzrayim as being a long process. We saw some themes about the notion of ta'anugim, of enjoying your meal at the Seder and some other karpas. We saw some themes about interconnection between Am Yisrael. And we saw some themes about, which we're going to be contrasting today a little bit, about Teva. That a night of Yetzias Mitzrayim, we realize that the Teva of the world is really good, the Teva of the Jewish people is really good. Sometimes you need a little bit of marar to remove the externals. Once you move the externals, everything is really good on the inside anyway. So the Rav also has a lot of just great words on Haggadah, and he has a couple of themes that I think come across a lot. If you go through the various things that from the Rav Soloveitchik on Haggadah, the Book Festival of Freedom is one. Rav Schachter in Panini HaRav has a section there about Rav Soloveitchik on Haggadah and Harei Kedem. Rav Shurkin also has a section there about the Rav and the Haggadah. So there are a couple of themes that could come up frequently. There's the theme of Talmud Torah, which you might expect, that the night of the Seder is also a night of Talmud Torah. Talmud Torah has to get interwoven into the Seuda and into the Haggadah. There's the theme of Mesorah, of relationships within the family, particularly the older generation connecting with the younger generation in an experiential way. Those are themes which are important in the Rav in general, which we're not going to talk about. We're going to talk about the theme of slavery and freedom and what freedom means for Rav Soloveitchik. We saw freedom for Rav Cook meant the ability to do whatever you want, but then you're going to do what's hardwired within you anyway. It's about revealing your inner Teva. So let's see what freedom is for Rav Soloveitchik. So what you have in front of you is the essay in the book Festival of Freedom entitled Slavery and Freedom. You have a picture of the first page. Unfortunately, my technology was not so great, or my hand was shaking a little bit late at night, and I cut off some of the lines. So two aspects of slavery. This is the way the essay starts off. Slavery has two aspects, two different aspects. One juridic political, and the other typological or personalistic. Under the first aspect, slavery is identified with an institution based on the totalitarian conception of private property. That is, that the institution of private property is all-inclusive, embracing inanimate and animate things, as well as human beings. The body of the human slave, with all of his skills and talents, belongs not to the slave, but to someone else. Good. So what is slavery in the first aspect, juridic, political? It's basically, he's going to say, it's a kinyan mamon, that somebody owns the body of the slave. Under the second aspect, slavery represents a class of people who think, feel, and act in a different manner, thus reflecting a peculiar personality. And that Rabbi Soloveitchik connects with the Kenyan Isser, that there's something fundamentally about, and not in terms of the Mamonos, but in terms of the Isser v'Heter, which he takes as in terms of the basic personality of the slave, which is different. Agav, this piece is written up by Rav Schachter in Panini HaRav, and it's written up here in English. It's interesting to compare and contrast, because they're using the same, it's very clearly the same part. It could be the Rav said it twice, but one is in like Yeshiva Hebrew and one is in fancy English.
Who wrote this one?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I didn't check. I forgot to check if this was a transcription of a lecture or it was actually an essay that Rav Soloveitchik left.
I think the essays that he left are like more or less his language and not like Dr. Lofbein, whoever.
I don't know. You have to ask your Gush friends.
What?
You have to ask your Gush friends. Good. So these two kinds of serfdom or slavery, the juridic and the personalistic, do not always go hand in hand. When we read the Haggadah, we shall say before you a new song, Agulasenu ve'alpatos nafshinu, our redemption and the freedom of our souls. We're referring to two kinds of slavery. First, Gulasenu indicates that we were set free from juridic political slavery. Gula means a physical freedom in terms of dini mamonos. Second, alpatos nafshinu means that we have rid ourselves of the restrictive slave personality. Good. Then in the top of the next paragraph, which I cut off, it goes through that this is reflected in halacha. Everything has to have a source in halacha, but kinyan mamon, kinyan iser. He quotes various sources about the nature of a kinyan iser. And even if you're in mamonos, you're free, you still might be a slave in terms of your halachic status. And he says it's a kinyan iser in particular that puts certain limitations on a slave. Look at the next picture. What are these limitations? What are the limitations placed on a slave because of the kinyan iser, not the dini mamonos shavo? First, a slave is relieved of mitzvot haseh shezman grama, those positive commandments which are intermittent and dependent upon certain periods of time. Second, a slave is excluded from matrimony. His act of betrothal does not establish a marital community. Third, which we're going to focus on, he is pasul eidos, disqualified from bearing witness. So something about being a slave personality that disqualifies you from testifying. What is it? So let's go. Disqualification from testifying. Next paragraph. The slave is disqualified from testifying in civil and criminal cases simply because we do not trust the slave personality. It is not just individual slave whom we cannot trust, but the slavish personality in general, which can be discovered even among so-called freemen. The reason for this insensitivity of the slave to truth is to be found, I believe, in two levels. The slave is insensitive to the truth, and we're going to see why. Why is a slave insensitive to the truth? First, a slave is a person without options. The possibility of choosing between two alternatives is denied to him. When the Torah describes human beings in general, and Jews in particular, this was cut off, it speaks of two paths, two ways, two alternatives, blessings and curses, life and death, good and evil. The greatness of man, his dignity and his creativity, is expressed in his freedom of will and his ability to choose. So what is the basic definition of a free human being? Somebody who has the ability to choose to create. There are two paths in front of you. There's good and there's bad. That's the time when you're going to be able to look at the world with honest eyes and see see the truth for what it is. But if a possibility is denied from you, if you don't have the ability to choose, you can't create your own path, then we are choshesh that skews your entire perception, and therefore you're going to be hostile to Eidos. Soloveitchik, he gives an example. Look at the picture on the next page. It's quite well known that people who are not free, slaves, or people in prison or concentration camps, develop certain delusions. They see things not the way they are in reality, but the way they would like the world somehow to be. This is the first reason that Torah does not trust a slave. Its power of observation is very subjective, but why? What is the definition of a Kenyan Esser, of a slave personality? Somebody who doesn't have free choice, somebody who doesn't have the ability to choose what they want to do. Yitzias Mitzrayim, therefore, is a process, Rav Soloveitchik explains, going from Avdus to Chiros. It's going from a point where Am Yisrael didn't have the ability to choose their own destiny, they couldn't create their own future, to a point when free will is granted to them, or better yet, they choose to embrace the free will, the ability to choose that Hashem gives them. That is the definition of a free person. So for Rav Kook is a process of almost whittling away the Bechirah Kavshus, to a sense, getting down to the basic inner core of the Teva of a person that's already there. For Rav Soloveitchik is going to be the Geula is not going to be tapping into your inner nature, but realizing that you have choices, and you could choose one alternative or the other, and that very ability to choose, and ultimately the choice to be avadim to Hashem, is itself the definition of chirus. So it's similar, but it's sort of the opposite, because you're not getting down to your inner teva, it's hardwired anyway. You are embracing a challenge, you're embracing the fact you have two alternatives, and yet you're choosing to be an avad of Hashem in the first place. One good expression of this, if you turn to the last page, this is from a different essay in Festival of Freedom. Again, almost every essay in the book, it comes back to this point at some point. He's talking about the way that certain Hasidim and certain Rishonim use Yetzias Mitzrayim as a metaphor for breaking free from the Yetzer Hara. So he says we have a story of personal freedom, the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the story of a personal of breaking free from your Yetzer Hara. That's on the last page. The adventure of man is his attempt to raise himself from a natural, determined, and mechanical existence to a state of autonomy and freedom. Everyone is in bondage to the unalterable order of things and events, to paro. One is born into a slave world, into an environment of rigid causation and regularity. One is thrust into an alien, indifferent, alas, cruel world, where he's not the master but slave to events not of his making. Only through an act of sheer heroism can one free himself from this order and mold a new inner experience. Rav Soloveitchik then goes on to describe, some point in that essay, that our ability, our knowledge of science, sort of reinforces this notion that things just happen. Things happen to us. They're these great global forces. They're great natural forces, and they create a certain situation for your life. And you're just going with the flow. And sometimes it's true. Why am I not succeeding in school? Sometimes it's because you weren't born with the brains. God caused you not to be born with the brains. There are natural causes to explain certain situations. But the danger is that we're going to attribute everything in our life, particularly our own inner experiences, to those natural causes as well, to the powers in our life, to the greater forces that are there. What Yetzias Mitzrayim teaches us, if it's taken as a model, as a metaphor for an individual person in their avodas Hashem, so you have to break free from those natural causes. Yes, natural causes are important. Natural thing factors are important. They create certain situations. But within those situations, you still have the ability to choose about all the important things, i.e. your inner experiences, your morality, your spirituality, and your avodas Hashem. And focusing on your ability to choose and not attributing everything to natural forces, to chance, to fate, is something that Yetziat Mitzrayim is supposed to teach us.
I mean, both, maybe you just said this a minute ago, but in both the Rav and the Rebbe, they're both taking away the external controlling sources. But the difference is that what's left after those sources are gone, for the Rav is left is like a difficult challenge. And
yes.
If you really take away the external forces, you've got like it easy.
Exactly. Right. We're gonna see that in a second for the Rav. This whole notion of a kind of shaman shnasad to be tahorahi. All you have to do is tap into your inner soul, and that's going to be great. For the Rav, he might have believed that in some metaphysical level, but practically, that's not the way halacha relates to a human being. Halacha always relates to a human being as somebody with choices, and then you have to choose certain things. You can't just go with the flow. You're going to end up in a bad place if you go with the flow. Let's just finish this paragraph. In a word, free will is not a grant given to man, but a challenge he confronts, which he can and must meet. It is an objective he's summoned to realize, and the Exodus narrative is the dramatic presentation of his encounter, of his combat with and victory over his antagonist, namely the slave order and slave existence, where things happen to you, but you don't have the ability to create your own destiny. Right? This is a very important category in Salvation thought, called the Dofek. You have the child of fate, the child of destiny. Child of fate, things happen to you, you have no control. Child of destiny is when you realize halakha tells you, no matter what's happening to you, you still have the ability to choose certain things, and ultimately you have the ability to choose in those areas of life that are most important, your morality, your spirituality, who you are as a person, and your avodas Hashem. I mean, we want to see a very stark presentation of this outside the world of a Yetziat Mitzrayim. Again, I messed up a little bit. Halakha Command, page 109, right after the first section that we saw. This is in the second part of Halakha Command, where he's describing Halakha Command's creative personality, his creative capacity. So he talks about creation in general. Then he says, what is the pinnacle of creation, of God's creation? Man. So if the pinnacle of God's creation is the creation of man, and God endowed the human being with the same capacity to create, so man also has to create in the realm of humanity. What does it mean to create in the realm of humanity? It means to recreate yourself. What does it mean to recreate yourself? So he goes on, he gives examples. Tshuva, prophecy, and hashkaka pratis, I think, are the three areas where halakha tells you that you have the ability to recreate yourself, to redefine who you are as a person based on your choices. Before he gets to the examples, he has this very stark paragraph. It says, Judaism declares that man stands at a crossroads and wonders about the path he shall take. Before him, there's an awesome alternative, the image of God or the beast of prey, the crown of creation or the boogie of existence, the noblest of creatures or a degenerate creature, the image of man or God, of God, or the profile of Nietzsche's Superman. And it is up to the man to decide and choose. Skip down to the end. Herein is embodied the entire task of creation, an obligation to participate in the renewal of the cosmos. The most fundamental principle of all is that man must create himself. It is this idea that Judaism introduced into the world. That there are certain things which are caused by natural forces, but ultimately your bechira chofshis is your ability to choose, to create your own self. And by creating your own self, you are furthering God's creation, which is ultimately the purpose of the cosmos, for us to be mashlim, Hashem's bria sa'olam. So you see what's going on over here. For Soloveitchik, Hashem is a bore, we are supposed to be bore as well. What sense are we creative? What is the most ideal sense in which we're creative? We're creative that we build bridges, that we have Kiddushei Torah, that we come up with vaccines for illnesses. But the most important realm of creation is within the human being, just like the pinnacle of creation is the human being. And the way we're creative in the human level is by recreating ourselves through what? Through our choices. So for Rav Kook, what you're supposed to do, like Bitzal said, is to whittle away at the externals, in which case your teva is naturally inclined to do something. Rav Soloveitchik, the ultimate purpose of the cosmos is not to rediscover the inner teva of things, but it's to further God's creation by choosing certain things over other things. For Soloveitchik, this makes its way into various other interpretations of the Haggadah. One very stark one, which is I only found in Panini Rav, that we say, Anos Al Pi Adibur, Yaakov Avinu and his family goes down to Mitzrayim forced by God. Good. So you think you're forced by God. There's no free choice. But let's see what Rav Soloveitchik says. For he has a first shot, Anos Al Pi Adibur, that the going down to Mitzrayim was integral to Yaakov Avinu being Zocha to Eretz Yisrael. Great. Look at the second paragraph. The Hosef Od Ravino Bazeh. The Yosef Hayamishna Lamelach Mitzrayim. Lo Haya Yaakov Lachzor to Eretz Yisrael. Mufnei Yaakov Avinu Hayushtei Efshariyot. O Sheyirid Mitzrayim, Im Shar Kol Ashvatim, Bechdei Lachedes Klal Yisrael. O Li Sha'er Eretz Yisrael, Lachzik B'yishav Aretz. Lamro Tepirish B'Kal Yisrael. Yaakov Avinu was faced with two choices. either he could stay in Eretz Israel and stay in the Holy Land and keep up the Jewish presence in Eretz Israel, or he could take his family down to go with the family down to Mitzrayim and unify the family. So Yaakov Avinu had a moral choice, two choices. Which one is better? Which value is more important? Keeping the family together or keeping a Jewish presence in Eretz Israel? What's more important? Keeping the family together. Good. So let's bracket the actual moral choice that Rabbi Soloveitchik is setting up over here. But think about what he's doing. The Haggadah says Anos al Piyadibur. He's forced to go down to Eretz Israel. You look in the Rav Kook Haggadah, and he's an English version. He quotes something from Yitzhak Arieli, one of the early Talmidim of Rav Kook, where Anos al Piyadibur basically means that Hashem set a process. Hashem forced Yaakov Avinu to go down to Mitzrayim in order to set off to instigate the historical process of Shiva Mitzrayim, Mitzias Mitzrayim, all the way up to the ultimate Geula. Hashem had a predetermined plan for human history. Yaakov Avinu going down to Mitzrayim is part of it. Yaakov Avinu has to go down to Mitzrayim. Rav Soloveitchik is exactly the opposite. Yaakov Avinu had a choice. Two good things, two options. It tore him apart, staying in Eretz Yisrael or being Ma'akeh the family. And he had to choose to be Ma'akeh the family, and that's what Anos al Piyadibur means. How is this shot in the words? I have no idea. Mm-hmm. You see, Rav Soloveitchik is very clearly trying to put Yaakov's choice into his decision, or into his going down to Mitzrayim. And this comes up not just for Yaakov Avinu, but for the very process of Yitzias Mitzrayim for the Jews originally. It's not just, first piece was for us, when how are we supposed to think about Yitzias Mitzrayim? Second piece was about Yaakov going down. What about the Jews? Many of my friends point out, the Jews seem completely passive in the Yitzias Mitzrayim story. Both of them were idol worshippers, both the Jews and the Mitzrayim. The Jews were not deserving. Hashem came down. Hashem does it himself. He saved the Jews. Why? In Pshat, because of a promise to the others. Let's look at Rabbi Soloveitchik says. This is Rabbi Eitan Holzer. This is in a YU Torah to go. He says he listened to a lecture Rabbi Soloveitchik gave on the Haggadah, and he wrote up some of the various words. So this is a vart on Mitzchila of the Avodah Zarah Yovasinu. In the seventh parak of the Rambam's Laws of Chayim Tumatzah, the Rambam writes, "Afilo Chachamim Gedolim Chayav Masabeh Tiyat Tzrayim Chol Marak Mitvarim Sheiru V'Shahayu Harzeh Meshubach." So the Rambam uses two words, Sheiru and Shahayu, that occurred. So skip down to the end after the translation. Rambam is always extremely careful in his wording. At first glance, Shahayu V'Sheiru would appear to mean exactly the same thing. That happened. Rambam is never prone to redundancy, and each word he uses has a meaning. In Hebrew, if one describes a situation such as has fallen from a tree, he uses the word she'ira. If he describes a circumstance as one in which he climbed the tree, he uses the word shahaya, I think it should be. I think he repeated it twice.
Yeah, it's
a
word.
Yeah. Shahaya means...
No, she'ira means...
She'ira means, thank you,
yeah,
that something happened to an object that was passive. The gravitational pull caused the person to fall from the tree. A force overwhelmed him. Shahaya, however, denotes that the object was active, and he executed a conscious decision that utilized his energy to accomplish an objective he had set for himself. So certain aspects of Yitzias Mitzrayim were She'ira. God came down and forced the Jews to leave. There's also an aspect of Yitzias Mitzrayim that was Shahaya, that the Jews themselves chose to follow God. The Jews themselves did something internally to be Zocha to Yitzias Mitzrayim. And he connects this to the Machlokas Rav and Shmuel about Maskel B'Gnos M'Sayim Mishvach. What is Maskel B'Gnos M'Sayim Mishvach? So if you think Maskel B'Gnos M'Sayim Mishvach is that he went from Avdos L'Cheiros, from slavery to freedom in a Dini Mamana sense, so that the Jews had no say over. The Jews were enslaved by Paro. They didn't have the ability to rise up in arms against them to rebel. Hashem took them out. But if you're asking the question, if you think that Maskel B'Gnos M'Sayim Mishvach is from Mitzkilo of the Avodah Zarah Yovaseinu, then now the Jews are over the Hashem, so that's not something which God could ever force upon them. How did the Jews transition from Mitzkilu of the Avodah Zarah Yavoseinu to Akshav Karvenu Makam Lavodaso? Not Shi'iru, but Shahayu. And that Shahayu, that choice to be over the Hashem, is the main transition from Avdus Zachiros in the Yitzias Mitzrayim story.
So, I mean, he's like explicitly saying he likes the Manda Amar and the Amorayim, he likes one of them better.
I think he likes one of them better. He's saying that. I mean, he does say that that is more integral. It's this inner transformation. I think the word more integral is, okay. It does come up in the essays, Testable and Freedom. I will try to find a line if you want. But I think we all might say that if it's more integral that Jews are over the Hashem than Jews not be slaves. Maybe. I'm not sure. Let's just read the last paragraph. According to Rav, who says that the Gnus and Shbach is Mitzkilov Yavodazar Yavosenu, that our redemption is from idol worshippers to worshippers of Hashem. How did this Gula take place? Was Avram forced to choose God? Spiritual redemption from idolatry, paganism, and primitive religion, and cults can only happen with Bechira Kapshas. Does not just happen to a Jew. Avram realized idolatry was wrong and saw the mistakes of paganism, so he chose God. And that same exact thing happened to the Jews in Mitzrayim, which becomes a model for every single Jew the night of Seder, and always, to have your own Yetzias Mitzrayim, to realize that certain things in your life are always in your choice, and Bechira Kapshas, self-creation, becomes the paramount principle of the Torah. The next essay is very similar. It's basically saying the same thing. That what Hashem another big theme of Soviet thought, Falakta Bidraka, whatever Hashem does, we have to copy. Hashem, he says, acted with a certain element of gevura, with self sacrifice, which you can read the essay to see why. At the night of a Seder, and we Jews have to respond with a certain element of gevura, of self-sacrifice. What was the element of self-sacrifice that the Jews expressed the night of a Seder? Because originally, it was putting up the blood on the doors. Putting up the blood on the doors was an act of huge self-sacrifice. It was the god of the Egyptians. It was something which they would have been ridiculed for, something which they would have been persecuted for. And the Jews chose to listen to Moshe Rabbeinu and put up that blood on the door. If you skip back to the last page, he says that Hashem it's a similar idea. Hashem took the Jews from Dini Mamonos Avdos to Dini Mamonos Cheros, but this inner transformation from a slave personality to a free personality, the choice to be an Oved Hashem, was done by the Jews. Because those two things are similar to the two kedushas we have in Eretz Israel, the Kinyan Kibush and Kinyan Chazaka. That Kinyan Kibush is somebody coming from the outside and conquering. That's God forcing the Jews to leave Mitzrayim. And Kinyan Chazaka means the Jews on their own settle Eretz Israel. They inhabit it. They do mitzvahs there, and that creates the Kedusha. And which one is more lasting? Which one has a more enduring effect? Not the Kibush. Kibush is gone once somebody else conquers. But the Chazaka, the Jews themselves choose to settle Eretz Israel. And the Jews themselves do mitzvahs in Eretz Israel. That is the more enduring and lasting Kedusha. He says it's the same thing with Yetzias Mitzrayim. The fact that Hashem took us out from Dini Mamonos Avos, Dini Mamonos Cheros, could have been reversed by other nations coming and conquering us. Let's just read the picture on the last page. How many exiles, how many periods of Hester Panim have the Jews undergone since the prophet Ezekiel sat in the depths of the exile in the river Kavar? The Chiras Yisrael, the election of Israel, should have evaporated, along with the promise, I will take you to be my people, and I will be to you as God. What right do we have today to celebrate Pesach, to bless the God who redeemed us and redeemed our forefathers in Egypt, Imas and Singhalo, with understanding that every generation will must see himself as if he went out of Mitzrayim? After all, God's taking of us as his nation was accomplished by conquest. And if conquest was annulled, Bechiras Israel likewise would have been annulled. The Dini Mamonos aspect, the Kibush, is not enough, because another Kibush is going to undo it. The answer has already been given. The election of Israel in Egypt did not come out through conquest, through the mighty hand and outstretched arm, through signs and wonders, rather through the divine revelation of a still small voice in the soul of the nation, through the fulfillment of you shall take a bunch of hyssop and dip it in the blood, through the sudden elevation of soul and spirit, through when all the people bowed low, through the acceptance of the sanctity of Israel and of the commandments, through in your blood you live, through being transformed into God's temple, I think it just means through the house being transformed into God's temple. And just as the sanctity of the temple is never annulled, so too the election of Israel exists forever. What actually caused Kedushas Israel and Bechiras Israel to last forever? The fact that God gave them a choice, and they rose to the challenge and accepted God's mitzvos, that creates an inner transformation that's going to last forever, similar to Kedushas Shnia and Eretz Israel, which has happened through Chazaka, which also lasts forever. So you see, for Rav Soloveitchik, this is a major theme in Yetzias Mitzrayim. Many other people think, I don't have the names, but everything was done by God. The Jews didn't deserve anything. God wanted to fulfill his promise to the Avos, and took them out. But Am Yisrael had a choice, maybe in Matan Torah. They had a choice later on in history. But Soloveitchik, that choice has to be there from day one, and that is the basic definition of a switch from Avdus to Chiras. Thank you so much. Hope everybody enjoys. And next week in Meretz Hashem, we will do a little bit of the Rebbe on that.